you're spending like 20 minutes during the reception setting up this super creative ring shot with three different lights and a champagne glass in the front so you get some crazy foreground. And some clients don't care about ring photos at all. We're not crafting them for the clients. We're crafting them for other photographers to impress them. And so you'll see in the photography forums, these photographers are posting like they're behind the scenes of the ring shot that they did. Meanwhile, they've spent 20 minutes not paying attention to what's happening on the dance floor and what's happening over at the bar. That's when all the good stuff happens. That's when all the emotion, that's when all this activity is going on. But you're off in the corner shooting a ring shot on a table that no one really is going to need.
Hey, welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast. I'm your host, Raymond Hadfield, and today we are chatting with high-end luxury wedding photographer Brian Leahy, who shares the secret of how he went from shooting for $100 weddings to $40,000 weddings. You got that right. This episode is brought to you by CloudSpot, the all-in-one and way better than Google Drive solution to deliver and sell your photos online. And you can grab your free forever CloudSpot account with 10 gigabytes of photo storage for free over at deliverphotos.com. I had Brian on the podcast more than 6 years ago, back in episode 75, which is crazy to think about. And it is one of those episodes that I get feedback from other listeners about just how helpful and open Brian was. So I invited him back on, and I mean, he's the exact same person today. You're going to get so much out of this. But Brian shoots high-end weddings in one of the most saturated markets for photographers. So if anybody knows about, you know, quote-unquote competition, it's him. But as you'll hear, I don't think that he would actually call it that. By the end of this interview, you are going to walk away having learned three things. One, how to instantly build rapport with clients, what separates images from high-end wedding photographers and weekend warriors, and how to transition specialties to build a business that is a better fit for you while bringing in more money. Now, if you want a masterclass on how to become a high-end wedding photographer, this is it. Trust me. And stick around to the end where I'm going to share with you my three biggest takeaways so that you can start to implement what it is that you learn here on the podcast and become a better photographer. So with that, let's go ahead and get on into today's interview with Brian Leahy. Last time you were on, you shared how you got into photography. So if anybody wants to hear that, they can go back and listen to that episode. But I believe you started with a point and shoot on a trip to Ecuador, and then several years later, you built a name for yourself as a high-end wedding photographer in one of the most saturated markets here in America. But today, things are obviously changing. So rather than asking you, when did you know photography was going to play an important role in your life? I want to ask you, when did you know that photography was no longer going to play as important of a role in your life as it did?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, there were two points, actually, because after I had built my business in LA to a point that I was very happy, I was shooting more than I wanted to. It kept me very, very busy, but I actually got fairly burnt out in LA because I was working the same venues every weekend. And, you know, years that I shot 30 or 40 weddings, I'd be working at the same venue five, six, seven times a year. And I found it hard to be extra creative. And I never really considered myself an ultra creative photography. No one's looking at my photos being like, wow, how did he get that photo? My stuff was very classic, very timeless. It wasn't ultra creative. So for me, I didn't go into photography with a super creative brain. And so I really struggled after working at these venues weekend after weekend, trying to find new spots to shoot and new pockets of light. And so I really started to get burnt out in LA. And my ultimate goal was always to combine travel with photography. And I made it a point to really go heavy into destination weddings. And so it took me a good like 3-4 years to start building my destination wedding business. And that was amazing because I would never shoot a venue more than once. I was always in a different state or a different country or a different private residence. And I found my photos were better. They were way more creative because these were brand new places that I had never worked before. And walking into, and I was photographing at really amazing places like Banff up in Canada and Jamaica and Italy and all these really, it's hard to take a bad photo when you're going to some of these places. Like I'm not going to the middle of nowhere. So working in locations like that and getting to travel and also getting to spend what was 3 to 7 days with my couples, with my vendor partners, because when you shoot destination, you're not photographing just a single day wedding. You're not working 8 hours on a Saturday and you're out. You're shooting rehearsal dinner and welcome party and guys golf tournament and the brunch on Sunday. So you're shooting for 3 to 6 days often. And that was really exciting to me. But about 6 years of that in, 7 years of that, I was now at, 14, 15 years of shooting weddings. And I just got burnt out, dealing with COVID and 2 years of what that madness was, trying to shoot, when you're not allowed to have gatherings was a lot. And coming back into it was amazing because we got to photograph all these really tiny weddings during COVID. So we were shooting weddings with 10, 15, 50 people, and they were almost always incredible weddings. They were intimate. There were a lot more meaningful and more heartfelt. You could see it. And a lot of these clients said, hey, we're going to throw the little wedding now. And as soon as COVID's over, we're going to throw a party. A lot of my clients never threw that party because their wedding itself was so good. And so when we started to go back to these big 200, 300, 400 person weddings, all of that kind of magic of the intimacy of a wedding, in my opinion, kind of got lost again. And it was the same old routine. And I just got burnt out on it. I was like, you know what? My heart's not in it. And I knew because I could tell I was not doing as good of a job for my clients. The photos themselves were still great, but I wasn't giving it 100%. I was at like 85, 90%. And it was like slowly dropping. And I knew, I was like, you know what, I got to find something else.
I feel that. I feel that so much. I also stopped shooting weddings, and a lot of it was because of COVID as well. I remember I was going to a wedding, and as I was packing up my car, there was like this hesitation. I almost felt like this, here we go. And then I had to stop myself. One. Yeah. And be like, wait a second. Why do I feel that
way? Like, wait, yeah, I'm getting paid to be here. This is my job. Like, suck it up.
Exactly. Well, on top of that, it's like, I built this. Like, I did this to myself. And why am I feeling this way? And I think that means something. So I too got out of weddings. But let me ask you, if it was the intimacy of small weddings that you truly enjoyed, why not explore just elopements, smaller elopements, destination elopements?
The price point that I had gotten myself into wouldn't really allow me to shoot those. So, and I say that in that, after 15 years, I built this really incredible business. My very last wedding was my highest paying wedding. And I'm always open to talk about pricing. So like my very last wedding was almost $40,000.
Wow.
And yeah, it was amazing. And I'm like, why am I leaving this? Like, this is ridiculous.
A hard thing, yeah.
This is not an easy thing to leave. But having said that, it's when you're in that type of price range, there are very limited clients who are willing to pay that. And I could have dropped my rates to $10,000 and shot triple the number of weddings. But I also had gotten to a place where I was only shooting, 10 to 12 weddings or 10 to 12 events per year. And so being in that type of price range, there is a very specific type of wedding and client that is hiring you at that level. Mm. And so all these weddings, again, were multi-day, huge destination, large crowds. And so my price alone kind of kept me from doing those.
Then let's go ahead and start there. I know that obviously you transitioned, as you just shared, out of photography, out of weddings. And I really do want to hear more about that. But since this is the Beginner Photography Podcast, I figure let's go ahead and just start with some questions about your time as a photographer. I'm gonna start with a question that everybody has after hearing that right now. Okay. With your last wedding there being $40,000, somebody right now is thinking to themselves, I just got paid $400 to shoot a wedding, and it was a thrill. I couldn't believe that I made that much.
Yeah.
They can't even fathom getting to $40,000. So I'm going to push you. I'm going to push you real hard right now.
Do it.
If you had to write out the 5 oversimplified steps to go from weekend warrior to high-end wedding photographer in their market, what would those 5 steps be? Hey Hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy-to-follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos.
It doesn't even need to be five. It is one step.
Let's hear this.
But it's a very long step. The only thing you need to do, naturally, your photography is going to get better. Like, and for everyone listening who is charging $400, that's a perfect number you threw out, because the very first wedding I ever shot was for $400. I had some family friends call me up. They're like, hey, we weren't even going to have a photographer. We'll pay you $400. Do you want to come shoot it? I spent like $600 and bought my first flash because I was like, well, I'm shooting inside. I need a flash. I shot weddings for $1,000 and $4,000 and $15,000 and $40,000. So you can get there. Like, it just, it takes time. And so naturally your photography will always continue to improve over the years as you shoot. So I don't need to sit here and tell people, go learn how to shoot more. Like, you're just going to do that by shooting. But in order to build your business, you have to network as much as you humanly can. And I say that knowing how well it worked in Los Angeles, which LA has more photographers than literally probably any city in the entire country.
Right.
And having to compete with that many is really difficult. Your work alone will not make you stand out unless it's something ultra creative. But even then, it doesn't matter. Like, you're in a sea of thousands of photographers. Who knows you matters much more than how well they know your work. And so when I decided to go into weddings full time in LA, I spent 2 years and went to every single networking event I could possibly find. And so at the time, that was ABC, Association of Bridal Consultants, that was WIPA, that was NACE, that was ILEA, it was all the acronyms for all of the wedding industry and photography networking groups. And so not only would I attend all of these, I would volunteer shoot for as many as I possibly could. And within 2 years, everyone in the LA wedding business knew who I was. I hadn't necessarily worked with any of them. But the funny part is, when you go consistently to these things and people see you constantly, they don't realize what they're saying when they say it, but they're like, oh my God, you're so busy. We see you everywhere. In reality, I'm like, I'm not busy at all. Why do you think I'm at every one of these events? Like, if I was busy, I wouldn't be here. So, but, you know, and then once you've shot an event for one or two of these people, especially these networking events, your photos are now getting disseminated to the 50 to 100 attendees that were there. So your work starts getting around. You eventually pick up small little jobs. I shot for free. I still shoot for free every once in a while. Like, so also don't think that I'm getting paid $40,000 for every gig. You will always work for free if it's a good fit, if it's going to be good for the future of your business. And as I started shooting some of these other auxiliary events for some of these planners, because the planners wanted to kind of test me out and they didn't want to test me on a paying client. So they're like, hey, we've got a little birthday party, or we've got, you know, anything. I would show up to these events 6 months later and planner A would say, oh my God, Brian just shot this birthday party for me. You should see his work. It's amazing, as she introduces me to her other friends. And so the snowball of that networking works really, really well. It takes a lot of time. There's no quick fix to it. It's not something you can do in a month or 6 months. This takes years. But having your name out there and people knowing who you are is vastly more important than how good your work is. If your work is good, you're in, but you need to know people and people need to know who you are.
That was great. That was succinct, and easy to follow. And what's great is that, you know, there's that phrase that, the simplest things are the hardest, you know? And I think that some people have a hard time just answering the phone, 'cause they're like, what? I don't want to call anybody. Like, I don't know what the conversation's going to happen. And me personally, I don't have a problem with talking on the phone, but I struggle with asking others for help. It almost feels like a weakness to me. And networking seems fine. I can go and I can make friends and chat with people. But how do you would you ask for gigs, or would people ask you to shoot things for them? And then side question after that, how do you go from, yes, I just shot this birthday party, but now I just want to focus on weddings, evolving your business?
So I, and I've done a lot of teaching within the wedding space, specifically on marketing and networking. And so my typical policy is I am not a used car salesman. I try and avoid passing out business cards as much as I can, because I would rather collect a business card from somebody and say, oh, so great meeting you. I ran out of my cards, but I'll make sure I follow up with you, and then do follow up with them. But I rarely will ever ask for work. And so for me, once I've met somebody, I find that building a relationship with them first will naturally lead to work. And so if I meet a planner at one of these events, you know, my second year, and her work looks really great and she seems super personable and we hit it off as like on a very friendly basis, then eventually we will probably work together. That could be 6 months from now. That could be 6 years. I had planner friends who were really close friends of mine who didn't hire me for my first 10 years, but it's because perhaps my style of photography was not a good fit for their clients, or perhaps they had another photographer that they almost used exclusively. There's a thousand reasons that people may not hire you. And a lot of time it's not because they don't like you. It's just because you're not necessarily a good fit for them yet. And so I would spend my time cultivating those relationships first, and 9 times out of 10, they would eventually lead to paid gigs. And, you know, as far as moving from like the birthday party to a $10,000 wedding, a lot of the time, if you shoot one small thing for a planner and they really like what you do, what they're looking for is not how you shot the event. A lot of the times they're looking for how you interacted with the client, how you interacted with the other vendors, how you interacted with the planner themselves. Were you a diva? Were you super easy to work with? Were you flexible? Were you on top of things if the weather changed? That's what they're really looking for. Again, your photography doesn't matter that much. Like if it's good, it's good. It doesn't need to be beyond stellar. But how you work with all of those other people on event day is vastly more important. So if a planner sees that you're really good with kids and you're really good with grandma and grandpa at this birthday party, they're going to have no hesitation hiring you for a wedding, because they know you can handle all these different personality types. And while a wedding is a beast of a thing to shoot, if they see that you're good with people and they like your photography, it will end up naturally leading to them hiring you for bigger events.
I see. So let's dive a little bit deeper into that, because as I said earlier, you know, sometimes the simplest things are the hardest, right? It's this networking. If it were that easy, quote unquote, if it were that easy, everybody would be doing it, right? So as somebody who has done it, has successfully networked your way to the business that you built, where do you see other photographers struggling? Like, where do you think that it's a struggle for them?
As you move into the higher price level of weddings, 99% of your clients will come from event planners. When you're shooting, when you're in a $3,000 photography price range, those clients don't have planners. So your referral source also makes a significant difference in how you build your business. At a $3,000 to $5,000 price range, most of the time those clients are not going to have an event planner. So they're being referred to you by their friend, by their sister, by their mom. So those are like direct referrals from other photography clients. But once you start to move out of that price range and you start to work with these planners, planners have a lot of control over who gets hired for these events. And I've worked with hundreds of planners all across the country. And as far as like things that I've seen planners complain about photographers, that's super easy. They're divas. They think they're at the top of the food chain when they're not. The planner is. They take too much control over the timeline and don't build in enough time for the video team, or they're combative with the video team. Because again, we work side by side, photo, video. Like, we should be collaborative, not combative. Yeah. But if you're a diva, any amount of attitude, planners are like, no, we don't have time for that. You could be the most amazing photographer. Your photos could be mind blowing. But if they leave that day and they're like, God, that photographer was a pain in my... Photographers whining or complaining about not being fed soon enough, it's the little stuff like that that makes a huge deal. Other things planners will be like, we wish you hadn't done that, is just taking too much time of the couple. Like, the couple is going to get burnt out. They don't want to shoot photos for 2 hours. As much as we're like in our art and like, we need to go create, No, they have a party they got to get back to. And so, you know, working with the planners to ensure that you're running on time and that you're following the timeline and just being really cognizant of all the other moving parts, because I think photographers tend to get in their own little world at weddings and they're like, this is about me. And it's like, no, no, it's not. You're hired help. Yes, you're creative, but there's this weird shift when you start to move up levels in the photography space. Most photographers start and they are creatives and they take beautiful, creative, amazing photos. And I've had this conversation with photographers for years. They're like, I don't want to move into the luxury space because I want to create my art and my clients right now appreciate my art. And I don't want to be just staff, which I get. But also, if you want to move up, here's what's crazy about the photography world and the wedding business. The higher end you get, the less creative you need to be and will be, because those types of clientele want classic, traditional, modern. They're not looking for ultra creative photos. They're simply not, because that type of price level is also third, fourth generation wealthy, and they want the same type of photos that their parents had. And you look at the most creative photographers in the space. Typically, who's hiring those unbelievably creative photographers is other creatives. It's other photographers, it's graphic designers, it's people who truly appreciate that level of artistry. But those are also not necessarily the people that are spending $20,000, $30,000 on their photographer. So there's this balancing act that has to happen when you transition from, you know, a $5,000 to $8,000 photographer to a $15,000. Your art, while you can still create it for yourself, is not as important on wedding day because your clients are not looking for it. Does that make sense?
It does. No, it absolutely does. And I can think of other photographers who I've interviewed on the past, or in the past rather, and seeing their work, I've thought to myself something similar. Maybe it's just that mindset thing of like, you would assume, you know, the higher price mm-hmm. point, the more creative it has to be, the more unique. Is that something that you figured out by accident? Like, because surely at some point as a photographer, you do want to level up your skills. But at mm-hmm. what point did you say, okay, I'm done. Like I can start shooting all these weddings that I want now. I'm good.
I can definitely tell you when I realized that. So, and this is still a thing. And again, like, no shade to anybody who does any of these things. Anything I'm saying, I've done at some point in the past. So again, like your mid-range photographer, you're spending like 20 minutes during the reception setting up this super creative ring shot with three different lights and a glass, a champagne glass in the front, so you get some crazy foreground and some. Clients don't care about ring photos at all. There's not a single client in the history of my weddings that has been like, hey, these ring photos aren't very creative. Can you like reshoot these? Not a single client. And so we spend a lot of time like crafting these really cool photos. We're not crafting them for the clients. We're crafting them for other photographers to impress them. And so you'll see in the photography forums, these photographers are posting like they're behind the scenes of the ring shot that they did. Meanwhile, they've spent 20 minutes not paying attention to what's happening on the dance floor and what's happening over at the bar. And yes, their second photographer is covering some of that. But like during the reception, that's when all the good stuff happens. That's when all the emotion, that's when all this activity is going on. But you're off in the corner shooting a ring shot on a table that no one really is going to need. So you start to not get recognition for these ultra creative photos. And because I also wasn't creative with my portraits, I always was kind of worried that I'm like, I'm not going to get hired for higher end stuff because I'm not that creative. Then I started looking at the top 10 most expensive photographers in the US, many of whom are friends of mine now. None of their photos are creative. They're beautiful. They're classic. They're well lit. The exposures are unbelievable. The editing's beautiful. They are not creative photos. Like if you took the top 10 photographers in the US, the most expensive, and you put all their work together, most of it's pretty similar. So I could probably tell the difference between a few of them, but for the most part, they're very classical bridal portraits. The family photos are very, very similar. They're not ultra creative. And as I started looking at that, I'm like, all right, those people are charging $30,000 to $80,000. And I can take those same photos. They can. So what are they doing differently that I'm not? And that's when it really started to kick in. Oh, who's hiring them for these weddings? Who are the planners they're working with? What are the venues that they're working at often? Because I really looked at them and I was like, if they're doing that and I can take those photos just as well, what am I not doing that they are?
Isn't that kind of like a like a bruise to the ego there. You're like, oh man,
for sure.
you get into photography for that creative element, and and then to get to where you are shooting these $30,000-$80,000 weddings, it's you don't have to utilize the thing that you got into it as much, but. Just from a technical standpoint, right? Mm-hmm. Just looking at two images, mm-hmm. you said that you looked at a lot of, high-end, some of the highest paid wedding photographers in the country. If you looked at, a photo from them and you looked at somebody who is a weekend warrior, just from a technical mm-hmm. standpoint, where do you think that the gap is? What separates the two photos?
Editing style and or lack of consistent editing style is an immediate kind of red flag about a new photographer. Like a prime example, I have an old friend of mine. She's getting married in California. She reached out. She's like, hey, can you look at this guy's work? We're interested in hiring him. He's like $5,000 price point. His photos were good, but his editing style, you look at his portfolio and there's like 8 different editing styles within these photos. And to me, I'm like, oh, this guy hasn't figured out his editing style yet. Your editing's as important, if not more important than your actual photos. Everybody can take the same photo, but if your editing's not consistent, that's a very red flag for me in referring out somebody who's kind of new to the business. So figure out your editing style first, even if you're going to stick with it for like a full year, like you're going to edit the same way for a year versus putting out a portfolio where like, well, I like greens a little more this month. And so now your photos are extra green and like, I like them a little more cool and blue this month. That to me is a problem. The other thing that stands out, and again, this is going to come with as you build your business, you will also build your kit. There's a huge difference between a 3.5 and a 1.2 lens. And so when I very first started, I bought my cheap body, but then I spent really good money on lenses. So I bought a 51.2. I bought the 70-200 2.8. That gear does make a difference. You don't need to go out and buy all this stuff, but having at least one really nice lens, because, again, you look at the people at the top, they're only using like 3 different lenses. The camera bodies these days don't matter at all. It does not matter what camera you buy. They're all the same. They're all amazing compared to 5 years ago. They're beyond. I mean, camera does not matter. Lenses do.
Of course. Yeah. It always matters until it doesn't matter. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. When you're at that range, you're really competing only against like 2 or 3 other photographers who are also some mm-hmm. of the best in the country. When you're in that situation and you're not being picked because of how creative your photos are, how mm-hmm. would you differentiate yourself?
So that's the relationship with the planner really matters. I mean, some planners, especially at the high end, may only refer one photographer. They're like, we know our couple really well. We know what they're looking for. We know what their style is. We're only referring Brian. Some planners say, we really want Brian to shoot this, but we're also going to give client 2 other options because we're doing our due diligence. We want to present them with 3 photographers, see whose style they like a little bit better. So at that point, some of it does come down to photography style a little bit, and then a lot of it comes down to personality. So there are photographers at the high end that are still a little more introverted, a little more quiet. I'm not that. I'm loud. I'm very like interactive. Most of my clients tend to be really big partiers. That's like I specialize in drunk adults is what I tell people. So that's my kind of crowd. And so there's not a lot you can do at that point. So if I know I'm competing against my buddy Dennis and I know I'm competing against Alan, Dennis has a very specific editing style. Dennis has a very specific shooting style. And the planner, for the most part, is doing all of the selling for us because the planner knows us well enough to describe how we work. So what's interesting is at the very high end, rarely do you even have an interview or a consultation with those clients. Rarely. Like I couldn't even tell you last time I had a consult with the clients. It's basically like maybe we'll get on a phone call and just be like, hey, let's talk about the flow of the weekend. Right. And I'll tell you guys a little bit about myself. But a lot of the time you're kind of getting booked sight unseen because the planner's like, great, you're within their price range. I know they're going to love you. And that's it. And they have so many other decisions that they're making for a wedding like that, that if the planner's like, you guys are paying me and trust me, we're bringing in Brian. And that's how it goes a lot of times at the top end. You may not even meet. I've had weddings at the high end where I have met the couple for the first time on rehearsal night.
Oh my, wow. How do you build a relationship to be able to get them comfortable enough in front of your camera to get the photos that you need?
That's what you're getting paid for. No, that is the key question. It it takes years of practice. You have to be really good with people. You have to be able to walk into a room. And while I can be loud and boisterous and super interactive, when I'm meeting that couple for the first time, I am 1,000% professional. I do not drink at weddings, except for maybe the very end of the after party on Saturday night. But you just have to walk in. You pay extra special attention to the groom, because a lot of the time the bride is she's the star of the show. And granted, this is different if you're shooting two men or two women or whatever the situation may be. But make sure you're giving both people as much attention, because a lot of times somebody in that group has gotten forgotten a little bit, and they're just there because they're like, well, today's the day. I'm excited to be here, but I have no idea what's going on. And building rapport with both of them. And I'll give you a quick tip. This is one thing I did for years, and it impressed people every time, and it immediately builds rapport. The one thing you can do that will impress everybody at a wedding is memorize names of all of the VIPs, not only the bride and groom, but every single parent, every single sibling, and the entire wedding party. And you walk in, and as you're meeting them, you say, oh, Steve, thank you so much. Or Mr. Smith, it's so great to meet you finally. I'm looking forward to meeting your wife, Linda. Knowing people's names is such a secret sauce thing, and it's hard to do. Like, it takes years. And so typically for like 5 to 7 days before the wedding, I've already sent out a questionnaire to the couple or to the planner. And so I have all these names. I will also go into the social media for the couple if they have it public, and go find who all these bridesmaids are and groomsmen. So I have that face. So when I walk in, I can immediately know, oh, that's Sally, that's Stacy, that's Stephanie. And just that little, people are insanely flattered if you know their name, especially if they haven't met you before. And so that is the most, it's the easiest way. And when I say easy, it takes years to do, but just that little thing is it, you're now friends and not some random guy who has no idea who you are.
I don't even know, you know, where to go from there. Cause that is that's one of those things. You're absolutely right. And it's so simple. It's free. It takes work. But I mean, I remember situations where I've shot a couple's engagement session. I showed up to the wedding and the parents are like, Raymond, and they'll be excited for me. And it's like,
exactly.
You were looking at me like, wow, this feels amazing. So doing it for them would feel similar. And obviously if it's their day, if it's their friend's day, that that just adds to it. That is great. That is a great tip right there. I want to go real quickly back to your images, because we talked about the creativity it doesn't need to be to 11, but for you as a photographer, you do want to do better. I want to know, where did you have the most room for improvement? What was Brian Leahy's Achilles heel?
Posing.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I had like my same three go-to poses. And, you know, and part of my conversation with my couples is always, you are not hiring me to pose you, because if I make you do some weird thing, it's going to show in your face. You're not going to like it. My shtick was always, listen, you guys are hiring me for my candid photography and how I can get you guys to act naturally in front of my camera without being posy. And so over the years, I transitioned from doing a lot of posing to just being really good conversationalist with them to get them to be natural. And again, building that rapport with the groom, especially if this is a you know, straight wedding, building that rapport with the groom was super important, because he was always the most uncomfortable. I hate having my photo taken. Like, anytime I take a photo with my girlfriend, I make the same silly, awkward faces because I don't have somebody directing me. And so I understand how weird that is. And so for me, I keep it super light, super fun. We tend to move around a lot. And then I started getting better at shooting those like in between moments, in between poses. And it's the little walk and it's the look of them as soon as I put the camera down and then bring another one back up. Weddings are not just about the couple. They're mostly about all the guests. They're about grandma, who is now 95, and they're just excited for her to be there. They're about the best friends they only get to see once a year. And so I and myself and my team, we got hired for all of our candid photography, because also their friends can shoot portraits on an iPhone now and they still look spectacular.
Right.
But wedding guests cannot compete with really beautiful, stellar candid photography. Your cell phone simply cannot do it. And your cell phone can't anticipate when those moments happen. So that's what we were getting hired for. My couple's portraits were fine. Like, all of my clients were like, oh my God, these are great. In my head, I'm like, these are not so awesome, especially always comparing to my friends who are very, very talented. Some of their portrait work is just beyond beautiful. So yeah, that was definitely my weakest part.
That makes sense. I appreciate you sharing that, because I know that that is also a weakness for a lot of new photographers. And to hear that that's not like the most important thing that you have to be wonderful at before you can mm-hmm. make any sort of progress as a wedding photographer, I'm sure it's mm-hmm. going to help out a lot of listeners. Kind of a side question. Now that you're not shooting high-end weddings, obviously, but from that perspective, what are your mm-hmm. thoughts on the impact that AI is going to have on high-end weddings? There are two ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn. With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear, like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments. So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com. And as a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar.
Minimal. I mean, the biggest impact is just on the editing side and the back end systems for turnaround. I mean, I started using an AI editing system 2 years ago and I'd never turned back. I was like, why would I ever edit my own photos again? It built a version of me, so it was editing as myself. But when you can turn around an entire wedding in a day, I would do that, but I would never actually deliver it. I would still wait like 3 to 4 weeks. So don't deliver your images too soon. Like, even if your clients know you're using AI to edit, don't deliver too soon, in my opinion. Send out 40 or 50 teaser images. Great. Keep them happy. But wait at least like 2-3 weeks before you deliver the full gallery, because you want them to like kind of marinate, enjoy that wedding. Because if you deliver photos the next day, they're on their honeymoon. Yeah, they're going to look at them, but also like, do you see the beach over there? They're going to go do that instead. Like it loses the magic if you deliver too soon. As far as other things that AI may impact on the photo side, I honestly don't know. I'd love to hear your opinion on it. I don't think it's going to have any impact at all, because again, we're not getting paid because we know how to use a camera. We're getting paid because we know how to interact with people. And until they have a robot that physically comes in and knows how to interact with grandma and the drunk cousin and a 4-year-old who's screaming all over the place, until that happens, I don't have any concerns for the luxury photography space.
Or the 4-year-old who gets so nervous that everybody's going to look at them before walking down the aisle that they just puke.
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So do you see anything on the horizon that would have an impact?
Well, what you said is that your clients are hiring you for how you interact with them, because you're dealing with people. Mm-hmm. And I think that that happens at a certain level. And before mm-hmm. that, a lot of photographers are being hired because they have a camera, because they know mm-hmm. how to use the camera, or simply because couples just know that if they're getting married, they need a wedding photographer. And it's just one thing mm-hmm. to check off the list. So I will say that, having had conversations with people like John Dolan, he talked mm-hmm. a lot about how his couples want authenticity. That's mm-hmm. the most important thing. And it's not mm-hmm. so much that, because I had thought about this as AI was starting to come out, and you could take your face and put it on any sort of wedding image, right? And mm-hmm. suddenly you can mm-hmm. get married in the Bahamas and have never left Indiana. Mm-hmm. But there is an element of, this is fake. This is not real. This is, and exactly. That's fine for some. I mean, my wife puts on a filter on Instagram or whatever, where she's puking a rainbow, you know, like that's clearly fake, and that's fine for some things. But there's always going to be a subset of people who want, well, this is the real thing. This is what really happened. And mm-hmm. I had the same feeling as what you had just said. I don't think that it's going to have much of an impact on on a high-end market. It's everything in the middle. It's everything in the middle, because low end, of course, it's going to be used. and it's going to be used often. It's going to have to be relied upon. The middle is what's going to be squeezed to one end or the other. And I think as a photographer, you have to choose which side you'd rather be on.
Yeah. And I think AI will absolutely not replace, but have a severe impact on portrait photographers, on newborn photographers. Because imagine you're taking a photo of a newborn. You could put it in this beautiful background now that you don't have to spend 2 hours creating, and you can shoot it in a studio instead of shooting outside in the cold or the warm or whatever it is. It's a lot easier for something like that. Whereas I feel like with live events, any events of any sort, but specifically events, it's hard to fake that because it's movement. It's unpredictable. And even photographers in the middle, I'm trying to think of like how this would impact photographers who are shooting, you know, $40,000 weddings. I think even for those couples still, these photos are going to get sent to grandma, and grandma's not going to want some photo where she's been AI photoshopped on some random background. And so I do agree, especially, you know, with Dolan talking about authenticity, especially with weddings. These are things that are just really hard to fake because everyone will know because everyone was there. You know what I mean? And you've got an audience of 100 people who are like, wait, what is this? They're going to be like, no, where's the photo of me on the dance floor with my boyfriend? You know what I mean? I think there's opportunity there for certainly like enhancements of what those photos may look like. But yeah, I don't know for weddings, just because it's such a dynamic event that everyone is a part of. And they'll know if like you're delivering all these weird fake, you know, AI images.
I remember the first time I was able to swap a sky in one click,
yeah,
or do it in batches and think to myself, this really cleans up this boring Indiana sky on this extremely hot day to be more dynamic and interesting. And I think in situations like that, you know, nobody's really going to care. But again, if you're getting married in the Bahamas, whereas you were just in a church basement, yeah, it's going to be huge, huge difference. That it just, at what point, what do those photos mean? You know, so.
Well, yeah. And to your point, especially about doing sky swaps and background changes and all these things that you can do in Photoshop Generative Fill now, I think those are great. But the issue is going to be there's not enough education for couples hiring these photographers who are doing a lot of that manipulation. Because if you've got this amazing portfolio of 50 stunning images with these beautiful sunsets, and which you don't get 99% of the time.
Right.
I always tell my friends who are starting to look at photographers, I said, the best thing you can do is ask for 3 full galleries. Do not look at their portfolio more than about 5 minutes. If you're like, these are great, amazing, ask to see an entire full wedding. And photographers, it is your job and your duty to be sending to these clients a couple full galleries so they know what they're actually hiring. So I think that's where people are going to get themselves in trouble on the low end, is because they are building these images, but they're not building enough of them. Or they're only using them for their portfolio without still showing clients what a full gallery really looks like.
Yeah, good point. Good point. I always tried to send a gallery. If I knew that a couple was getting married at a venue that I had shot before, I'd be like, great, I love that place. Here's a sample of what it might look like on your wedding day.
Yeah. And listen, I faked a photo, one of my best photos ever. I faked it like 10 years ago in Photoshop before like AI was even a thing. I had these clients do a dove release. And like only like 4 doves came out at a time. So it was like 4 here. And then like 10 seconds later, another 3 came out. And so I didn't have one single frame with all these birds. And so I ended up faking it. Like I pulled from like 8 different frames, and then it looked absolutely beautiful. But again, it was only one frame that I could deliver from what was still like a 10 second first kiss. And I told him, I was like, hey, this is obviously fake when you guys see this. It looked amazing. No one ever knew. But then the 10 images following it had 2 birds in it. So it's like, you're either going to fake them all or you fake none of them.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I want to talk now about the obviously, this is a show called the Beginner Photography Podcast. A lot of the photographers listening right now are still new in their journey. They're still fresh. They're excited to keep learning. But there is a subset of people who maybe they are at the tail end of their journey. So I want to talk a little bit about the knowing when to move on versus the need to go deeper. Because at one point you said that you got burnt out of shooting all the same locations. So instead of moving on, you went deeper and started doing destinations. But then at the end of that, you decided to move on. So where do we start to figure those things out for ourselves?
I think you kind of nailed it earlier when you have that feeling in your gut. You always got to trust the gut. Like you know, if you're in it, you know, if there's something in the back of your head that's like, I don't know if I really want to do this anymore. You know, when you show up to a wedding and you're not excited, like this was an amazing, amazing career. Like it treated me so well. I had so much fun. I got to work with the most incredible people in the country. I got to travel to amazing places. And so I know some people will be like, I can't believe this guy bailed out after charging, you know, $40,000, but you also owe your clients. Like you are being hired as a professional. And if you are not giving it 100%, then you need to, that needs to be a trigger in your brain. Like, why am I not giving this 100%? And if I'm not, is now the time that I need to start looking at other things? Cause like there were a couple weddings where I know I just phoned it in. Like we did a great job. Clients were super pumped with the photos, but I knew, I was like, could have done a little better. Could have paid a little more attention. Could have been a little more interactive with that family. I didn't memorize all the names for that wedding party. Those things, you have to listen to those things. And so I know there's plenty of photographers that still phone it in because they've been shooting for 20 years. I don't think that's fair if you're charging significant amounts of money.
So then what about the whole, you know, you had built such a business, you had made so many connections, you had got into destinations because you like travel. So it's not like you just completely imploded everything and started fresh. I mean, you kind of did. Mm-hmm. But tell me how the transition from
local to destination.
No, not so much. More of like what you're doing now with destination and travel coordination. Would that be the right term to use?
Yeah, I'm a travel agent. Yeah, there's fancier words, but I'm a travel agent.
It's more than that. Like you're selling yourself real short here.
Yeah, no, we can dive into that for sure. I actually had some friends suggest it. So I had a group during COVID that we did a Zoom every Tuesday. It was a core group of really amazing wedding industry friends. There were about 7 or 8 of us on there. And we were all talking about exits because everyone who's been in the business long enough is always talking about how to get out. And I had two of my friends. They're like, well, you've been giving out free travel advice for a decade. Why are you not getting paid for it? And it had never even occurred to me that travel agents were still an industry or a career that existed. So I started chatting with some friends, found out I've got some friends who are in the business, and kind of just added it as a companion business onto my photography. My plan was, hey, I know all these amazing places. I've traveled so many countries in the world. I have clients who are like, hey, where should we go on our honeymoon? I was like, I can just add this as an auxiliary business to my photography. So 2.5 years ago, my plan was not to retire out of weddings. I was like, maybe this will be a slow transition and maybe this travel thing will take off. What quickly happened for the first like 7-8 months, I didn't tell anybody. I just told like 3 friends and started doing some of their little family vacations. And then they told some of their friends and they told some of their friends. And so started doing this on the side. I only announced to my network 13 months ago that I was adding travel. So November of 2022, I put a video on my Instagram before a big wedding conference that I was attending. I was like, hey, by the way, I've added travel. I'm still shooting a full season. I'm not retiring. And pretty much since that video went out, my wedding business tanked and my travel business took off. Mostly because I started putting all of my energy into the travel business, because to me, it was more exciting. It was new. It was a passion of mine for the last, you know, 20 years. I live and breathe travel. And so it took 2 years to finally get out of weddings. But once I started seeing the potential in the travel business, and once I started seeing my photography start to drop off, I was like, now I'm in, I got to commit. This is it. Like, this is the moment. But it was a good 2 year transition to make that happen, because my planners saw that I was transitioning or pivoting or whatever you want to call it. And you have to specialize. Most photographers, when they start out, shoot everything. I shoot nightclubs, I shoot babies, dogs, like bar mitzvahs, birthday weddings, parties, you name it. Yeah. Birthday parties, everything. And that's great for your first few years, and you absolutely should. It gives you an opportunity to figure out what you're good at, what you enjoy. But by the end of year 3 or 4, you got to figure out what your niche is. And so, because people don't want to hire somebody that doesn't specialize in anything, but it dabbles in all the things. And so I feel like when I started putting out much more travel content, my photography inquiries really just tanked, which was the plan. I mean, that I was very okay with it. I knew that was going to be the case. Whatever you're putting your energy into is what you're going to get. And you can't split your energy between two careers. And it changed from, hey, this is a side hustle thing, to, oh no, this is going to be a career. And that's when it really started to kind of blossom.
Do you think that originally having it as an auxiliary business for your wedding photography and then transitioning just into doing this helped you, like, with clients? Because it's not like you went from I shoot wedding photography to now I'm a nuclear physicist and these mm-hmm. are such different worlds. But do you think that you mm-hmm. were able to take some of that clientele or networking that you did and help build your business?
1,000%. Hmm. So every part of my travel business is now somehow related to my wedding business.
Wow.
Yeah. So in a few ways, like early on, I started booking honeymoons for a few of my photography clients because they found out I was doing travel. And most people don't know a travel agent. There's not that many of us. And so started doing that and then booked some family travels from there. And so because I was already running in a high-end net worth type of client, those are also the same clients that are spending a lot of money on travel. So the transition for me was surprisingly smooth because I wasn't starting from scratch within the travel business. There was still 1,000, and there still is 1,000 things I have to learn, but my client base pretty much just kind of moved over. I was lucky enough that travel, high-end travel and events and weddings are still so closely tied that that transition was really easy. Like you're right. If I was like, oh, I'm going to go be a physicist or I'm going to go be a psychiatrist, there's not a lot of pull through from one industry to the other, but I just happened to know travel really well. And I'd been doing destination for, you know, for so many years that that transition was fairly smooth, which I don't know if that's just by luck or it's because I had great friends who are like, hey, you should do this because you're already doing it. But I did luck out that it was pretty smooth.
Well, I think that from having talked to you today and obviously a few years ago when you were on the podcast, it sounds like one thing that you do well is you listen to yourself and follow your gut, you know? And if travel is that thing, like obviously it's been in your life for a long time. You said that your high school graduation gift was a trip, like, and then that's how you got into yep. photography. Yep. So I think it's, you know, it's just listening to yourself. So I don't think that it's wild. It's not anything crazy, but obviously it set you up for success. And as we were talking about, I think before we recorded, it's easy to see looking back how you got mm-hmm. to where you are, but it's impossible mm-hmm. to be somewhere and see what exactly is going to happen in the future. So
I think you also have to listen to the people closest around you. If you're hearing something more than two or three times from people who don't know each other, and I'll kind of tie this all the way back to how I even got into photography. It wasn't my idea. It was a bunch of friends' ideas, because when I started traveling, came back, and I had like three friends who didn't know each other, saw my travel photos from Ecuador. And they're like, wow, these are really good. You should get into photography. Had never occurred to me, it was never even a thought. I'd never even picked up a camera before, but I was like, by the third person, I was like, all right, they're not saying this just because they're trying to pump me up. They're like, they really like these. So this is what I'm going to at least explore now. And I think being open to those types of possibilities when you hear things from other people, and that's how I ended up in travel. It wasn't my idea. It was a couple friends who were like, hey, you're already doing this thing really well. It could be a career for you. So whether you're getting into photography or trying to get out, just listen to those people, because if they're saying those things unprompted and you're hearing it multiple times, it's at least worth exploring what those possibilities might be.
I couldn't have thought of any better way to wrap up this this episode than that. That was motivational and very exciting. So, Brian, before I let you go, I know that listeners are thinking to themselves, I want to see some of Brian's work. I want to know what he's up to now. Can we see any of your work anywhere now that I think about it?
That is a great question. Yeah, so I have not taken down my photo website, so they can find me at Brian Leahy Photo, and that's L-E-A-H-Y, brianleahyphoto.com. I'll probably take it down in like a year. I'm still keeping it up. It's more nostalgic than anything else. Otherwise, my travel site is brianleahydestinations.com, and Brian Leahy Destinations on Instagram. I pretty much have no photos left on there either. but if you're looking for travel inspiration, that will absolutely be the best place. I've got some insane travels planned this year. And I love sharing. Everybody always wants to talk about travel. So it's a common denominator that almost all humans share. So if you're looking for some travel inspiration, you can find me on the gram.
huge thank you to Brian for coming on. And like I said earlier, I mean, just being so open and honest with everything that he shared. Wonderful conversation. Now, if you liked this conversation about high-end wedding photography, then do not miss my interview with John Dolan on how to discover the true essence of telling a story with your camera. That is episode number 414. Now, I had three big takeaways from this interview with Brian Leahy. The first one is how important it is to expand your network. You know, so for you, try actively engaging in local wedding industry events. Like Brian did, you can volunteer your services as a photographer, you know, work for free, attend workshops, and try to build relationships with the people who are there. As you are there more, people will see you more and, you know, start talking to you. You're going to build those relationships. But the first step is that you have to show up. And what a pro tip from Brian on you taking their business card so that you can follow up with them, because that put you in control as far as, you know, when you're going to contact them. And it's honestly one less thing for them to have to follow up with. So, you know, that is greatly appreciated for sure. Takeaway number two is to understand your clients' expectations. You know, clients want to know that you have them covered. So you can be proactive on that and show your potential clients a full gallery of your work to show consistency and quality of your photography, that you don't just have one or two portfolio worthy images, but that you can deliver a full gallery that tells a story and is high quality photography. And obviously, remembering names. Holy cow. I mean, I can't overestimate or overstate this enough, you know, remembering names. Now, know that even though Brian memorizes everybody's name right away, you don't have to start with that. I know that can be very overwhelming. As he said, it's hard for him as well. But I can tell you that if you just start with, again, if it's a straight wedding, just the maid of honor and the best man's name, if you get them on your side, I'm telling you, they will do anything for you. Whatever you need help with, they will absolutely be able to help you with that. Takeaway number three is to embrace authenticity and candid moments. As Brian said, you know, keep in mind that a wedding is all about the guests and that those guests have been invited by the couple. Those guests, the couple want to hang out with their guests on their wedding day, you know? So that is why having candid photos are so great, because a candid photo is essentially just a version of our authentic self, and we are our true and authentic self with our friends. And if your friends invite you to their wedding, that, you know, and then you capture that candid element in a photo, the couple is really going to feel connected to that photo because that is their friend, that is their family member, that is their guest who, you know, they love and who they invited and who they remembered. So what a great tip on that. That is it for this week. I want to, you know, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the Beginner Photography Podcast, which is brought to you by CloudSpot. It truly is the easiest way to deliver and sell your photos online. So you can learn more about CloudSpot by heading over to deliverphotos.com and sign up for a free account. And remember, the more that you shoot today, the better of a photographer you will be tomorrow. Talk soon.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.